This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at Dicetower.com.
Hello, and welcome to a special holiday edition of the Family Gamers Podcast.
Hello, everybody. We are delighted to be here again this week. We are just coming out of, I guess, the Christmas hangover. I think that's what it would be. Like, we are recording. Usually, we record a little bit earlier in the week, but we are recording on Saturday night, December 26th. The children are nestled in their beds, probably not asleep yet. They're probably still on a sugar high from all of the chocolate today. But we are the Family Gamers. This is episode 226. We are delighted to be with you. And as always, I am your host, Andrew, and I'm joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
Anitra, my dear, do you know what comes next on the show?
You are going to tell me something about the number 226.
I am. Here we go. Fun fact. The Culinary Union Local 226 is the biggest union in all of Nevada. It has over 60,000 members.
That's a lot.
That is a lot of members. And I was thinking about this. I was like, why Nevada? Like, what's going? And then I was like, oh,
all the
Las Vegas
with all the all the buffets and the
So the Culinary Union Local 226. It's 85 years old.
Happy birthday.
I mean, that was on November 1st was when they were established officially. So it's a little bit, you know, past that. But I mean, I'm just saying it's been around for a little while. Anyway, this week's episode of the Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial. Okay, Anitra, we did it. We made it through Christmas.
That means it's the best time to start planning for next year's holiday spending.
But I just said we're recovering from the holidays still. They just happened. Why should we start planning for next year now?
Well, because one common budget killer is, quote, one-time, unquote, expenses that creep up on us even though we really should know they're coming. An easy way to make sure your bank account isn't crying, like it might be right now, is to look at how much you spent on holidays this year, then divide that by 12 and start putting that money aside as part of your regular monthly budget, starting in January, which is a week from when this podcast.
Which is bananas, but I digress.
As a bonus, when all those Christmas in July sales or hooray, it's not coronavirus anymore sales start popping up, you'll already have money set aside for buying gifts for next Christmas. This is one of many tactics recommended by First Move Financial to help you take control of your finances. To schedule a time to talk to First Move about other things you might be able to do, head over to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to set up an initial 15-minute call.
Thank you so much to First Move Financial for sponsoring this episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. So, we kind of mentioned the holiday hangover that we're coming out of now, I suppose. And this week on the show, we are going to talk about Christmas. We're going to talk about the games that we got or gave and some of our Christmas traditions that we do. And of course, we're going to solicit your Christmas traditions in the Family Gamers community on Facebook.
All right, so let's get right into it with what we've been playing.
Yeah, so I actually had a whole bunch of extra work I needed to do this week, which was not convenient at all. But I did manage to get a little bit of game playing in. The first one I'm going to talk about is a game that I did not play with you. I played it with Elliot and Asher, and that was Castles of Caladale.
Oh, so Elliot has been asking to play this specifically with you for quite a while now.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what it was that got that idea in his head. I'm totally okay with it. I had never actually sat down for a full game of Castles of Caladale before the other night.
Yeah, so what'd you think?
It's fine. It's kind of a neat, constant spatial puzzle. You're constantly reevaluating what you're doing. You frequently will find yourself kind of trapped, and then you can say, wait, hold on, it doesn't need to be this way. You can even take things out and let them sit aside for a while before adding them back in. You're trying to build a castle and have air around all sides. It reminds me a little bit of Galaxy Trucker, but with a lot more flexibility.
Yeah, and it's not timed. It's very forgiving in that you can take pieces out, you can put them back in again, you can move them around.
And honestly, we were kind of helping each other, you know, when Elliot would get frustrated because he's, you know, six. we'd say things like, hey, you know, you could just kind of move this thing over here and do this thing or whatever. And it worked out really well.
I would say it's pretty much right at the edge of his ability level to deal with the little frustrations that crop up.
I think that's true. And I think that's probably the kind of thing that makes this attractive to him, because it lets him feel like he can figure out the problems that he's running into. And I think he likes that a lot. So can't really fault him. That is Castles of Caladale from Renegade Games.
Well, on Christmas Eve, you were working, and I pulled our big kids aside and said, hey, I really want you guys to play a game with me. How do you feel about butterflies? And so we sat down and played Mariposas. By Claire's decree, rather than pick the usual colors that each one of us would pick, we picked Christmas colors. So we had white butterflies and green butterflies and red butterflies.
Well, I mean, in her defense, butterflies aren't really a Christmas thing. So I think it was a good call.
We had a great time. It still feels like there's something just not quite there with this game, but the more I play it, the more I can get into the right groove for it.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. This was, when we talked about our favorite games of the year a couple of episodes ago, this was our biggest disappointment of the year, was Mariposas. And that's really a function of the crazy expectations that we had for it.
So much hype.
Because of Wingspan and Tussie Mussie coming up before it. So we've played it a couple times. You've played it a couple more times now. Mm-hmm. Maybe that opinion is changing a little bit. I don't think it really would take it off of that list of it being a bit of a disappointment. And again, and it's not really its own fault for that. But it's good to hear that playing it more seems to kind of clean things up a little bit.
Yeah, I think it helps to understand what to expect. You know, you're not necessarily trying to get all the way up to the top and all the way back to the starting point. You can spread your butterflies out and use them to do different things along the way. And keep an eye on what your fellow players are doing. There's some set collection in there that sometimes is worth it and sometimes isn't. And you generally can't figure that out, whether it's worth it or not, until about halfway through the game.
Well, and that was one of the things that I found so frustrating about it. It's not super obvious which goals are attainable until you've already committed to which goals you're going to try to do. At least that's how it was for me. And maybe with more experience and playing the game more and things like that, that'll kind of go away. So it'll be less of a problem.
Sure.
But that was one of the things that I really had a tough time with. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we also played some games on Christmas Day.
On Christmas Day.
On Christmas Day.
Okay.
You and I exchanged some gifts very early in the day after our kids' first round of ripping into things. And surprise, surprise, we gave each other board games.
Yeah, which is awesome. You know, I mean, that's a thing that we do, and it's great. And so Anitra and I have a budget, and we, you know, track our expenses and stuff and things. And it gets really dicey in December when we do this because, you know, we sync with our banks and stuff. And so I saw that there was a transaction from AEG, and I saw that there was a transaction from Eagle Griffin Games.
At least I bought from multiple places, so you had something to wonder about.
Well, so honestly, I was like, anytime the words Eagle or Griffin, like, would even approach the periphery of my vision or my hearing, I would be like, la, 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 stick my fingers in my ears, you know, do my best to not pay attention. I want this to be a surprise. I wasn't really thinking about it. The only game, honestly, it was not even Fleet the Dice Game, which, spoiler alert, was one of the games that Anitra gave me because that game is awesome. The only game that kept popping up in my head as a possibility was Football Highlights, the football version of Baseball Highlights.
Right.
Which is an Eagle Griffin game and is a pretty cool game. And I could see you getting that for me.
I did briefly consider that
one. Yeah, see, I would understand that. Because, but that was the only one that I really thought of.
Because when I bought Fleet the Dice Game, I decided I would buy you a second game at the same time. And then I looked all around on the Eagle Griffin website and went, huh, how about this one? How about this one? And what I ended up with was Roll for the Ages.
Roll Through the Ages, the Bronze Age.
Yeah.
So I'm actually really excited to try that one out. I love Through the Ages, A New Story of Civilization by Vlada. But that game, I can't play it in real life with anyone ever. It takes too long. Yeah. It's too fiddly. You would never play it with me. Like, I don't even own it. I used to own the first version because this is a game that has come out and had a couple of different editions. And I ended up, I don't remember, trading it away, giving away. I don't remember what I did with it because I would never get it to the table. In fact, I recently, this is shocking and it made me sad, sold my copy of Twilight Struggle.
I know.
I think it was literally less than 10 episodes again that I said it would never leave my shelf. And I was listening and editing that very show when I looked over and said, this game is never going to get played.
Nope, not in this house. It's not.
And I swallowed hard. I also committed to getting rid of 30 games, purging 30 games by the end of the year.
How did we do on that?
We're at about 25. I gave away another two games today.
All right. All right.
We're pretty much there. In fact, if the charity that we gave 35 games to earlier in the year was taking more, we would have been there. But they're all set right now. But anyway, wow, that got off. Sorry. Right. So anyway, so I saw Eagle Griffin, and I knew that there was something Eagle Griffin coming, and I didn't really know what it was. And I grabbed the box, and I think after I saw the box and shook it, I did the shake, you know, the shimmy, shimmy, shake, shake. Then I was like, I think Fleet is happening.
Yeah. So one of the games I got for Andrew was Fleet the Dice game, because he played this almost a year and a half ago now.
And I won't stop talking about it.
And yeah, he won't stop talking. He hasn't. Let's be fair here. Andrew has not pressured me to play this game with him, to find a way to play it with him. But he can't stop talking about how much he enjoyed playing it and how much he's looking forward to playing it again at some point.
Also, the last time I played it with Asher, who also enjoyed playing it.
Yes.
So Fleet the Dice game, for those of you who don't know, is the gamer's roll and write. And this is one of the reasons why I actually thought that it would be something that we could play together pretty easily, because it's a roll and write, which you like.
That's true.
But there's a lot going on, which I like.
So implicit in giving Andrew this game was the fact that I was committing to sitting down and playing it with him, which I have not done yet, but I hope to do before the new year.
Right. I mean, in your defense, yesterday was Christmas. So we did, however, play one game, and of course, it was a game not that you gave to me, but a game that I gave to you.
It was Silver and Gold, because that one said 20 minutes on the box, and we said, I think we can do that.
We could swing this one. So we did. We played Silver and Gold from Pandasaurus Games. That is a really nice, compact, flip and write game.
It is really neat. It had been attractive to me for a while, because the idea of a flip and write where you then use dry erase on the cards seemed really cool to me. And it turns out there's a couple of different kinds of cards in the game. The main stack you're working through are sort of these goal map cards, and you're trying to X out everything on the map. But you go through another set of cards that show almost like Tetris polyomino shapes, and you get one of those per turn. You must mark that on one of your maps. And if you can't, then you only get to do a single X somewhere. So it's an interesting spatial puzzle. There is a real feeling of like a map there, and it moves really fast.
It does. It moves very fast, and it's nice and small. I mean, it's a deck of cards and four dry erase markers in the box. I honestly think the dry erase markers took up more space. It's nice and compact. Yeah. I really, really like it. We could throw the deck in a purse or a bag or a pocket even, and one dry erase marker and share it.
A card caddy and a
yeah.
dry erase marker.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, go on a date, and it's really, really low storage, low profile, whatever it would be, low profile. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really, really looking forward to playing that many more times.
Okay. So speaking of games that are getting played, we played a game today that has been sitting on our review shelf for a little while, and I've been looking at it, and I've, in my defense, and you can confirm, I've been kind of casually pushing this game for a while. Like, when we're looking and evaluating, like, okay, we need to play a review game tonight. Mm-hmm. Here's four options. This game was in that list
for
3 months. I was like, here's the list. Here's four, honey. Which one should we play? Which one should we play? Blah, 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 and Maduras.
X, Y, Z, and Maduras.
And then finally today we decided, all right, you know what? It is time. Let us take out this game. We will play it two-player. We'll figure this game out.
It was great.
We played Maduras. This is a game from Haba. It does not look like a Haba game. It doesn't really play like a Haba game, but it does feel like a Haba game. Does that make sense?
Yes. Well, when we were playing through it, it's fairly simple in concept. It's
right.
A little challenging to explain.
Mechanically, it's simple.
Yeah, but my goodness, there are so many things going on in your head and so much that you need to plan for.
I think the game took us about an hour to play, and pretty much every 10 to 15 minutes, we would realize another layer of strategy on this game. We'd be like, oh, man.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So Maduras is a game. It has a Celtic farm theme, yeah. kind of.
Yeah, you're building little huts.
In a circle.
In a circle.
In a large circle.
as you are harvesting various raw materials. Then every time you build a hut or a little temple, this druid guy comes around and asks for you to make an offering to the local gods.
Right. And the way you get victory points is by making these offerings. And so the game naturally escalates the cost of things over time.
Yeah, that's
And the relative value of making these offerings over time.
Mm-hmm.
They go hand in hand to the point where if you plan things right tactically, you can make huge jumps in your victory points for relatively low cost.
Yeah, there was a turn where you ended up gaining like 30 victory points.
I mean, there was a lot in there. Yeah. I think you did that once as well. I think you gained like 25 victory points. Yeah.
Like that.
But at the end of the game, the druid kind of makes one last circuit around everything. And so
I was all ready to end the game. And then I was like, oh no, the druid's going to make one more circuit around. And the thing is that if the druid comes to your little hut and you can't make an offering,
like there's two different levels of offering. There's a low offering and a high offering. And if you can't even make the low one, you lose victory
you
points.
You lose a point. And then I looked around and I'm like, I'm going to lose 12 points if I don't stock up. Never mind. I'm not doing this last building and ending the game yet. I am going to harvest more resources for the next three turns.
So everything,
I don't lose so many points.
Yeah. So everything is public except for your resources. You have a little player screen. Think of a game like, I don't know, Keyflower or something like that. Or Isle of Sky or something like that. So what we were doing by the end of the game is we're making little mini circles behind our screen of all the resources we were going to need to try to plan them out.
And then these two. And then it's okay if I only have one over there. And then these two.
So
yeah,
I know that Hobbit does a really great job of layering their strategy and being very deliberate about what they make complex and not complex. Strategically, this did not feel like a Hobbit game to me, only because there were so many different layers to it. Like, even something like Miyabi is really pretty straightforward. And there was so much thought that had to go into everything that you were doing in Madeiras by the end of the game. It felt like it had gone to, like, Hobbit 2.0 level. I mean, the wooden pieces were big and chunky. Like, it had all of those hallmarks.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was almost like, I mean, this is a game that came out in 2016, and the art on it is very beautiful and kind of fantasy-ish, I guess. But it really, in my mind, reminds me of things like Mountains and Miyabi and Adventureland and these kinds of games.
Yeah.
It feels like a more advanced game than what you would classically consider a Hobbit game to be, and yet it is very also definitively a Hobbit game. And I remember T saying that this is one of their favorite Hobbit games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did say that.
And it's really a shame. Like, this is the game that 2016 forgot, because this is a really, really good, deep, multi-layered Hobbit game. It's really good. This game is not really for kids.
No, I think our 12-year-old will enjoy it.
Do you? I think our 10-year-old will enjoy it.
I think Asher, who's about to turn 10, I think he will enjoy it until he gets frustrated, and he will get frustrated trying to think so far ahead in how this all goes together.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's so good about Hobbit games is that you can pretty much keep playing. It just might not work out the best for you. In this game, either you can't do things or you are penalized for doing certain things.
Yeah.
And that feels very un-Hobbit-like to me.
Yeah, I agree.
But man, this game, this is such a great, thinky, multi-layered,
yes,
resource management game.
Well, now that we have played it,
I'm really impressed with it. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
So that is Madeiras from Hobba. Surprise.
All right. What else can I tell you about? Also on Christmas Day, while I was waiting around for our one guest to show up, I played a quick game of Sprawlopolis, which I had not pulled out in a while. Eked out a victory, which I was very happy about. It always feels good to do that. Earlier in the week, our kids had pulled out Go Cuckoo and asked me to play that with them, and Debloccle. I really enjoy both of those games. Go Cuckoo is just a lot of skill while also being really silly, which is a weird combination for me, but I like it. And Debloccle is so thinky and beautiful and easy to understand, but hard to play well, as shown by the fact that I keep losing over and over and over again to any child who plays it with me. But I like that. I like playing it, and I like watching their reactions when they win. So it all works out.
Yeah, that works out well. Yeah, I think the only other thing that we played quite a bit of Cloud City for our review, which was going to go out this week, but it was holiday week and it was insane. So it will be coming out on Monday, the same day this podcast comes out. That is Cloud City from Blue Orange Games.
And we also had played quite a bit of Christmas Lights.
Yes, we did.
Christmas Lights, the card game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in keeping with the season.
Absolutely.
And also for our review.
Actually, speaking of Christmas Lights, why don't we do this? We'll take a break. We'll have our snap review for that very game, Christmas Lights. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Christmas. We're going to talk about the games that we gave as gifts beyond the ones that we've already talked about. We're going to talk about some of our Christmas traditions, and we're going to invite you to come to the community and share yours as well.
All right, we'll be right back.
Well, it's Christmas time. It's time to put up the Christmas lights. No, they're all tangled, and some of them aren't working, and some of them are blinking. Oh.
This is a snap review for Christmas Lights.
Christmas Lights is a card game for 2 to 6 players ages 6 and up from Adam Collins and Chad Head. It's published by 25th Century Games.
In the box, you get cards for the title game, Christmas Lights, as well as instructions for 12 bonus games. 12 days of Christmas means 12 days of games, right?
I mean, I love the idea of 12 days of games for sure. So, Anitra, let's talk about the art in Christmas Lights.
I love Dave Perillo's art for this game. It starts with the box styling. It's a standard size box for a double deck of cards, but it looks like one you'd find on a hardware store shelf holding a string of incandescent bulbs.
The cards themselves show happy bulbs, happy little bulbs, happy Christmas trees, and very cute characters. I love the faces on all the bulbs. This aesthetic makes me think of, like, animated Christmas TV specials.
From like the 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the illustrated wires reach to the edge of each bulb card and line up nicely when placing several cards in a row.
Which, of course, is part of the central mechanic of the game. You want to talk about the mechanics, Asher?
Sure. In the primary game of Christmas Lights, your goal is to complete your strings of lights first. You can look at your pattern cards, but not at your bulb cards. These you hold out so all other players can see them.
So think of a game like Hanabi or Beyond Baker Street, where other players can see your cards, but you cannot. That's what this is like.
On your turn, first you can play some cards from your hand down into your string, or discard them if they didn't match the pattern you're trying to make. Then, in order, you may swap a card from your hand with any card from another player's hand, sell one or two cards to other players to gain information about the cards in your hand, and then you refill your hand back up to 5 cards.
But you have to be careful if you try to play a card from your hand down as the next Christmas light in your string of lights, and it's wrong, you just discard that card and you end your turn. Special cards, such as broken bulbs and bubble bulbs, allow you to continue playing into your string even if you don't have the matching bulbs. The bubble bulb cards trigger event cards that can be either good or bad, so watch out. Finally, make sure you have a plug card to play to connect your 2 strings of lights. You cannot start on your 2nd string if you can't plug it into your 1st one. So, Anitra, what did we expect from Christmas Lights?
Well, you and I generally enjoy games that involve deducing the cards in your own hand, whether that's Hanabi or Conclusio or Beyond Baker Street. We were hoping Christmas Lights would bring a nice family-friendly holiday theme to this sort of deduction game. The box design and the attractive cards won us over right away, and knowing that there were bonus games didn't hurt either. There were a few things that surprised us about the game, though. Asher, can you talk about those?
Sure. There was less deduction in the game than we expected. There was definitely some deduction, but there was a lot more swapping, technically stealing, cards that we needed or playing out blindly hoping for some luck.
I think this has something to do with younger kids playing a game like this and maybe not being as skilled in deduction, and so they start spamming the puzzle to hope that they hit on something, and it sometimes leads to frustration, sometimes it leads to happiness because you got lucky, but ultimately, instead of it being a clever deduction mechanic where we're all trying to get the right thing, it became a source of frustration, which was a little strange.
And once players start playing that way, even if you were trying to deduce your cards, you have to match that play style to keep up.
It certainly brings the game down when that's the way that other players are playing. Honestly, it seemed like all of the games end up relying a lot on luck and only a little on skill, even the solo games. This is fine for casual play, but it just didn't really hook us. Maybe if it was just adults at the table with a similar level of play experience, it would be a little bit better. But that mixed family, adults and kids, it was a little bit difficult. Our favorite of the minigames was one called Blink, which was basically a way to adapt Uno to use the Christmas lights cards.
Honestly, I think the age recommendation of 6 and up seems a little bit off. We got our 6-year-old to understand the rules, but there were just a few more steps involved in a turn than he could really handle, especially when combined in the difficulty of holding cards face out and the temptation to look at them while also trying to match up with the pattern card.
Ultimately, we were a little bit surprised by the disconnect between the age recommendation, the art style, which certainly seemed approachable at that level, and then the dynamics of play. They just didn't really seem to line up well. This is a game that would be better suited for an 8-plus or a 10-plus crowd, because that deduction mechanic, unless you're a really experienced board game kid, is a little bit foreign, and that makes it kind of hard. So Asher, with those 12 games that were in the box, did anything stick out to you?
Usually there's not really anyone to play a game with because Claire and Elliot are in their Zoom meetings and mom and dad are doing work. So I like to check out some solo games, and there's 2 solo games in the bonus games. They didn't blow me away, but they're still pretty good.
All right. So Anitra, what are we going to rate Christmas Lights from 25th Century Games?
I think we're going to rate it 3 out of 5 blinking lights. It's a fine diversion for the Christmas season and playing with a more grown-up family, but it's not our favorite. And that's Christmas Lights
in a snap.
And we're back.
All right, so in the first half of the show, we did a lot of talking about Christmas stuff and stuff that we did Christmas morning, games that we played this week, some of the games that we gave to each other.
So why don't we start off the second half by talking about the other games that were Christmas gifts within our family. So we already talked about Silver and Gold and Fleet the Dice Game and a little bit about Roll Through the Ages of the Bronze Age.
So let's talk about the other game that has been getting a lot of play even today, and that is Beasts of Balance. So this is a game that our kids saw at PAX Unplugged 2018, I think.
Probably might have even been 2017.
It was a long time ago.
They really have.
And these games went on ultra mega clearance from like Sam's Club or something about a year ago. And so they kind of cropped up on all the trade sites because people grabbed them up cheaply and then tried to trade them for more expensive games,
sure.
Which for me was fine. And so we traded for a copy of Beasts of Balance Battle Edition.
And hung on to it until Christmas.
And we stuck it in the gift box. This is one of those things when we heard about Christmas and July sales and all this stuff from First Move Financial, one of the tactics that we use is grabbing things that are on sale over the course of the year so that when we actually get to shopping season, our lists are a lot shorter than they would be otherwise.
We start with the box and say, what do we already have?
Right.
Okay, now what do we need on top of that?
Right. And Beasts of Balance was like, I don't know, half of the box because that game is huge.
It's a big game. For anybody who has not been listening to our show long enough to know what Beasts of Balance is, it is a augmented reality game, but not the kind where you're looking, quote unquote, through the screen. Instead, it's a game that comes with a plinth that is Bluetooth connected to your device, whether that's a phone or an iPad or whatever. And then you scan each of these creatures and special powers and cards and stuff on this little scanner area on the side of the plinth and then put them on top of the plinth. And so there's the obvious physical challenge of getting things to stack and not fall down, combined with all of these other challenges within the app for the game. So like various beasts are losing health, and if you don't want them to go extinct, you need to give them energy, and the energy pieces don't balance nearly as easily as anything else. So it's always this idea of like, well, I can do that and keep my beast from dying, but then things are going to get a lot harder down the road. Or you can do special things like cross 2 beasts together, and that gives you a new beast with way more health, and it's super cool, and you unlock stuff by doing that. Like, all the different types of crosses of beast get unlocked through the course of the game. It is really fun, and it can be played either cooperatively or competitively with up to 3 people trying to sabotage each other but also making sure that the tower doesn't fall down on your turn.
Yeah, so obviously this is a game that does require an app, so if you are looking for board games that are a 100% analog experience, this one's not for you, but it really is a super neat idea. It's really fun to see these towers and be sitting in the other room when they're playing on the floor in the living room and then hear, oh no!
I got it!
Yeah, yeah.
Because you do get a few seconds to put the tower back together if you only lost one or two pieces off.
Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of fun. That is Beasts of Bounds. They were overjoyed to get that game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We gave Asher, the 10-year-old, Century Golem Edition Eastern Mountain.
So we've talked about Century Golem Edition before. We talked about how much he loves this game. Century Spice Road was reviewed by Nick on the site probably a year and a half, 2 years ago. We gave it a 10 out of 10. It's a fantastic, great engine builder. Mm-hmm. Rock solid. The Golem Edition just makes it better. And then after years of Plan B saying they weren't going to do a Golem Edition of Eastern Wonders and A New Age, they finally
relented
and released those. So those are actually both out. Eastern Mountains is the second game in the Golem series, and I don't remember what the third one is called. It's something similar to A New Age, but it is out. We actually thought about getting both of them.
Yeah, and then we decided that we would show restraint and back off.
Ah, restraint. How boring.
About game number two before diving into buying game number three.
So we did, in fact, pick up Eastern Mountains. But at the same time we picked up Eastern Mountains, I finally snagged our copy of Unmatched Legends Volume 1.
Yeah, so ahead of Christmas, we started talking about Unmatched and the new Marvel series that are coming out and how you made a comment about, like, well, now we have all the Unmatched sets. And I was like, we don't have all the Unmatched sets, wink, wink.
And of course, now we still don't because Little Red and Beowulf came out.
Well, yeah. But I am really looking forward to mixing up even more Unmatched sets. I think Alice versus Buffy would be very interesting.
It would be interesting. I really like playing as Alice. She's fun. She gets to switch between Big Alice and Small Alice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of fun. I like that a lot. Yeah, I mean, listen, we talked about Unmatched until we're blue in the face. We've beat the dead horse. The dead horse is dead. Unmatched is great. More options are wonderful. I need a big box solution. The end.
That sounds about right. We got your mom a copy of Small World of Warcraft.
Yeah, so we have Small World and we don't super love it. We've played it once.
Yeah.
It probably was just a bad night or something, and so we'll have to play it a couple more times. I know the game is super popular. I know a lot of people really like it. It just didn't hit for us.
Oh, it's also a, you know, a time of life thing. Like,
yeah, maybe.
When we played it, our kids weren't really ready for battling type games that required thinkiness. Like, if they were going to battle each other, it needed to be head on. Like, just let me beat you down, and that's not what Small World is.
That's true. So, anyway, so we still have our copy, and my mom is a huge World of Warcraft person. Her Amazon wish list was basically World of Warcraft adjacent stuff left and right.
Yep.
And one thing that wasn't on it was Small World of Warcraft. And so we figured, well, hey, we know all about this board game industry stuff. Let's pick up a copy of Small World of Warcraft for my mom. And we can move on from our copy of Small World, although I do think we'll play it one more time. And then if we suddenly have some weird itch to play Small World, we can play with my mom.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, so we did that. And then the last game is a game that my sister got for me. So my sister was my Secret Santa, and she picked up for me a copy of Keyflower. This is a game that I have had on my list for a very long time. It's a game that I wanted to own a copy of. I've been trying to talk you, Anitra, into playing it with me on Board Game Arena, although I suppose I haven't, you know, given you the what for about not playing this game with me for a while. But yeah. I now have a copy, and we can play it in real life, and I'm pretty excited for that. Keyflower is kind of this city tableau building game with hex tiles. You're kind of building out your little almost village with some auction mechanics, with you kind of have to bid all of your resources to get the next set of tiles to build out your city to do other things and stuff like that. It's a really, really interesting game. I very much enjoy playing it, and I hope that you will like it as well.
Well, I'll certainly give it a try.
All right. And oh, you also picked up for me a copy of the Tiny Trees expansion to Tiny Towns.
I knew you would love it.
It's a micro expansion, and I really haven't had any time to like dig into it or anything like that. We'll have to play a little bit more Tiny Towns.
but it looks super cute.
But it does look cute. It's got acorns, and the acorns can sprout into trees, and there's some stuff going on. There's a new monument in there. So I'm pretty excited to check it out at our next opportunity. All right, so we mentioned at the top of the show we were going to talk about some of our Christmas traditions. So some are old and some are new. We did some things this year that actually, I think, worked out really, really well with regards to relative sanity.
I mean, it helps that most of these are things we've been building up to for the last couple of years. None of these were something, you know, brand new, never been tried before.
Really goes to show you that parenting is pretty much trial and error, and just you hope the errors are not too big.
All right, so this is going to be a combination of some things we have as traditions, some things that are tactics to make our Christmas less crazy, and some of them have kind of become both, which is fine. First, and probably honestly the most important, we are very, very clear with our kids on Christmas Eve. They should not come and wake us up. Sometimes we give a time bound on that, like, you cannot come wake us up before 7. But you want to get up because you're super excited? Fine. You can even wake each other up as long as everybody agrees. That's totally cool. You do not wake mom and dad up or you'll regret it.
I'm going to throw this out there before we kind of get started. For what it's worth, I'll say it like this. We've negotiated and Santa does not visit our house. That pretty much say what needs to be said?
I think that covers it.
And the reason why I say that is so it's not like there's some shock and surprise that there's some cookies that got eaten. Like, we don't, that kind of stuff doesn't happen. You know, we've had our phone calls with the North Pole and we've made our arrangements and so on and so forth.
Santa's great, but we already celebrate Christmas in a secular way, Christmas in a religious way, and a little bit of Hanukkah. So we don't need Santa to come by and add to the craziness.
Right. Plus, he's got plenty of other things to do that night. So the second tradition on our list, a lot of families will do this thing where it's like you can pick one gift on Christmas Eve. Right. That's something that's pretty common. And we kind of wanted to do something sort of like that, a little bit of an extension of that. And so what we did is we give our kids one gift on Christmas Eve, but the catch, air quote, is that gift is always the same for each kid, and it is always the same in general, and that gift is a new set of cozy pajamas.
Yes. We do not do matching pajamas, although one year you and I got matching pajama pants, but I pick out pajamas for the kids according to, you know, their personalities and what they like, and the pajamas make me feel good when I see how much they like them all through the winter.
Right.
Honestly.
And usually they wear those pajamas to bed Christmas night and then pretty much all day on Christmas.
Pretty much all day on Christmas. I sometimes make them change round about lunchtime or so, but not always.
Right. And it also depends on whether or not someone is going to come visit for some reason. We're a pretty open house. We invite our friends to come visit and stuff like that. Normally not right now. So that's always a possibility. So if we know that's happening, we'll, you know, make our kids put clothes on.
Yeah, and the older our kids get, the less acceptable it is to stay in pajamas all day long.
Right. Anyway, the next tradition on our list, again, this is a tradition that we have seen in other families, is the pickle. We have a pickle ornament. We take turns hiding it. It's either me or Anitra. The rule is that it can't be hidden higher than the shortest person's head.
Yeah.
And the kids know that as well, so they're not looking for it way up high or something like that. We hide the pickle in the tree somewhere. It's usually pretty deep in there, and whoever finds it gets to open a gift first.
So this leads into more of a tactic than a tradition. We are big on slowing down the present opening frenzy for two reasons. One is so that nobody gets overwhelmed, where nobody is me. But also so that if everybody is kind of taking their time with the presents a little bit, then each giver gets to see their presents opened, to see the appreciation on the recipient's face. And mom and dad in previous years have time to write down who gave what for thank you notes to go out later.
Yep, yep. And so what we do with this, so we have three kids, and what we'll usually do is we'll have whoever won the pickle, and then the next person gets to open a gift once the first person is done, and then the third person gets to open a gift once the second person is done. And we'll usually do two or three gifts in this circuit, although we rotate who opens first each time around to keep it fair. And then after two or three gifts, we will stop. Everyone will clean up. We will put our toys away, make sure that we have homes for our things for the most part.
At least temporary homes.
Parents, this is where the tactics become truly tactics. At this point, we encourage the kids to play with their new toys. And they'll usually lose themselves for 20 minutes, half hour, 40 minutes in their new toys. We mentioned that we gave some gifts early and we got to actually play silver and gold Christmas morning. That was after the first round of gift giving.
Yeah, they were caught up in playing with...
who knows what? Something. I don't even know. It doesn't matter.
Robots, maybe.
Right.
And so the two of us were just kind of like, we got some time. Want some coffee and a card game?
Yeah, what other parents at 8:30 in the morning on Christmas could sit and have a nice quiet board game at the kitchen table with cups of coffee? I don't know who it is, but I felt like I had arrived at that moment.
Winning. We were winning.
Yes.
No, in all seriousness, though, it has taken a while to get to this point. As a kid, I definitely remember ripping into stuff and just almost like a marathon, like passing out presents to other family members and opening presents really fast and my parents trying to slow me down and just not being able to do it. So we definitely had to deal with kids getting impatient because they were waiting their turn or trying to figure stuff out. So it's a balancing act. But it was well worth it to do a couple of rounds opening presents and then stop. Clean up the trash, put stuff away, play with stuff for a while, appreciate the things you've just gotten, and then we'll come back and do another round in half an hour or so.
And, you know, it's one of these things where what it really did was it stretched the Christmas experience over the course of a few hours.
Which was especially good for this year because we didn't really have anything else to do.
Right. That's true. Instead of just crashing the whole thing in the morning and then there's just a pile of stuff and maybe you'll get to it in a while. So like Anitra said, we've evolved our process over the years. We, for a while, would just kind of let them open everything and then we would sneak a bunch of it away and then kind of put it away and then dole it out over the course of the year.
Back when they were little and didn't know any better.
Yeah, but that was so silly because it's like, well, what's the point of giving them all these gifts on Christmas anyway? Just randomly give them stuff during the year and spread out the cost and things like this. So we didn't really like that approach. This is an approach that still allows us to really concentrate the gift giving on a single day, but spread it out so it's not just this exhausting, overwhelming 30-minute experience.
It was good. I liked it. I hope that we can continue this into later years when we hopefully will have more people at our house again. So it will require some tweaking for sure. But with the very small family Christmas that we did, it worked really well this year.
Yeah. And, you know, the big thing about this that I just want to encourage parents with is that it's really about setting the mood and expectations up front. So for us, we explained to the kids how it was going to work. And we were consistent with that. And as long as the mood stayed consistent, it was fine. And nobody really was upset about the idea that they had to wait to open their gifts. There was a little bit of boredom because we have a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old. But that was all. And in fact, we even had an incident, this is worth pointing out, where the gift piles were wildly uneven. And we were trying to figure out why. And our 9-year-old copped to opening a bunch of stuff when nobody was looking. And we got to sit down and kind of have a conversation about that. And nobody was really mad, but it led to a good conversation about self-control and about respecting the rules and about not like horrible things are going to happen to you if you don't do what we say kind of thing, but like, these are the rules that we put in place. You didn't respect the rules. It's unfair to your brother and sister, et cetera, et cetera. And we actually had a really good, like, wholesome conversation about the consequences of that kind of thing and how bored he was at the end when he got to watch his brother and sister opening gift after gift and he didn't have anything and he had to just sit there.
He didn't have anything left.
Yeah, because he had opened a whole bunch of stuff when nobody was paying attention. And so we were able to turn what could have been a disciplinary situation into a learning experience. And if we didn't have that discipline put in place to begin with to meter this stuff out, then we would have never had that opportunity. So that actually was something that I was really thankful for. But without setting those expectations to begin with, we wouldn't have been able to do that.
Yeah, I agree. So I have a feeling that a lot of people have discovered one of my tips, tricks, traditions for Christmas. Since so many people were having Christmas at home in a way they weren't accustomed to, I saw a lot of people posting online about what they were doing for Christmas dinner. What we were doing for Christmas dinner has not changed because for about 10 years now, our tradition has been to get Chinese food. And I personally love this tradition because it means everybody gets what they want to eat on Christmas Day. And I get what I really want, which is to not have to cook and to not have to worry about who's going to eat what and is there going to be enough food? Is there going to be too much food? What are we going to do with the leftovers? It's not an issue. And I really like that. So big thumbs up for the Chinese food and Christmas dinner tradition. That's one I hope continues for a very, very long time.
So that is it. Those are our traditions. That is our Christmas experience in 2020. We hope and expect that it will be pretty different in 2021. Hopefully there will be more people at our house. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we will see more people throughout the holiday season. We hope that you had a wonderful holiday season as well. If you celebrate Christmas, we hope your Christmas was excellent. If you celebrate Hanukkah, we hope that was good. If you celebrate Kwanzaa or Ramadan or any of those other things, we hope that you are enjoying your holiday season, even though for pretty much everybody, this holiday doesn't look like the ones in the past. So why don't you tell us about those holiday traditions? There's lots of different ways that you can do that. The best way that you can share those holiday traditions or what you got for Christmas or for Hanukkah or various things that you might have done differently this year, the best way to do any of those things is to go to our Facebook community. You can get there most quickly by going to thefamilygamers.com/community. It'll bring you right into the Facebook community, or in Facebook, just look for The Family Gamers Community and it will come right up.
If you want to tell us about something special you do for the holidays, or some new board game that you're super excited for, you can contact us on pretty much any social media at Family Gamers AA. We're there on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
That's right. If you have anything you want to reach out to us directly for, you can always email us, andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com. Speaking of Twitter.
Speaking of Twitter, indeed. Anitra, we have 999 followers on Twitter.
As of the time of this recording.
That's right.
We are so close to having 1,000 followers on Twitter.
So we're going to give away a game when we hit 1,000 followers.
Which, you know, hopefully will actually before this podcast goes out.
Well, possibly. But even if it does not, if you are listening to this and you have friends that might be interested in The Family Gamers, why don't you tell them about us? Tell them to follow us on Twitter. You can also leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts to tell other people who might not know about us that they should pay attention to The Family Gamers, that they should subscribe themselves.
It is a super helpful way to help us get our name and our content out there to more people who might be interested.
That's right. If you want more giveaways to happen, we need more people listening to the show. So when we hit 1,000 followers on Twitter, we will give a game away. We'll do a normal giveaway the way that we do them.
With Rafflecopter.
That's right. Yeah. We're looking forward to it. We're looking forward to 2021 doing all sorts of great, great stuff. We've got some things in the works.
I'm so excited about some of them.
Yes, we're going to be bringing some merch to the table. So we have been hard at work with a designer, putting some really cool stuff together. We're not quite ready to unveil it to everyone, but you should stay tuned because it's really, really cool stuff.
Real soon.
Real soon, we promise. We're thinking January.
Yeah. Last but not least, The Family Gamers is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to learn how the team at First Move can help you pile up the victory points. Thanks again to First Move Financial. They've been sponsoring the show for like a year and a half now.
Yeah, they're awesome. It's great. Love working with them. They're fantastic. We're looking forward to a great 2021. So that is our holiday traditions. Honey, there's a lot of brand spanking new board games upstairs that I can hear them calling out. They need to be played.
Play me, Andrew.
So that's going to be it for us this week. Until next week, everybody. Play games with your kids.